Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm Michael Hagan, Chief Instructor here at Apex Scotch Performance. And today I've got a very special guest, my good friend, Kenji Hirai, coming to us from Okinawa, Naha City, where he's practicing with our mutual sensei, Oshiro Toshihiro sensei. And so welcome and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, sensei. It's been a long time since we actually got to talk, not in person, but just talk in general with the advent of the pandemic and all that, but it's good to see you.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's awesome to see you again. I think, see here, the last time we trained together was right as things were starting to kick off in January 2020, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's just so weird because it's just been a year, but it feels like, I don't know, like 2 years, because it's just the lifestyle has changed for everybody, you know, like lockdown and just social distancing and masks and whatnot. Well, masks isn't that alien in Japan, but like everything like that. Just a lifestyle change, I think, is like the biggest, like, you know, difference for a lot of people. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, we all had such things planned. I mean, I had planned multiple trips back to Okinawa to train with you and with Oshiro sensei, and then we had a gashku scheduled for last year and
all
kinds of things.
That's the weird thing too. I remember hearing about that, like, you know, we had this entire thing planned for 2020, like just in tandem with the Olympics. Like as the Olympic ends, we would have our summer gashku kind of thing, like kind of be like a nice, like, you know, tie into everything. But everything just fell apart, like right around March. Like that was like right when spring came in, it was like, okay, let's go full blown, not apocalypse, but it was pretty close to that.
Pretty close
with some aspects of it. Like, you know, everyone's like, you know, with the coronavirus and all that. Yeah. So I don't want to say interesting, but it was a rocky ride. So it's finally settling down somewhat. Although in Okinawa, we actually went over 800 people with infected. So that was an adventure and a half too. So, you know,
yeah, no kidding. But, you know. Well, and I saw was it Thursday or just the other day, the state of emergency was lifted there in Okinawa and back to training in the Budokan and everything, huh?
Yeah, it's back to training. It's weird because these places that are so familiar for me or for everyone else, it's like stepping in back into it for like the first time. So it's like, you know, like we're all so used to setting up Zoom cameras and just like training online and whatnot. Of course, there's, you know, face-to-face training with Oshiro sensei, but that's like, you know, very, you know, that's one-on-one. So it's, you don't really have to worry about so much about, you know, getting the coronavirus. But like just being able to train with other people or just with people from your organization together, it's like, you know, it's a big thing, I think.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, training with your peers is like training with family, you know.
Right.
So if you don't get to train together, it's kind of like it's not hard for motivation per se, but it's just like, you know, you don't feel connected.
That's right. Yep.
Karate is all about that interconnection between people. Interconnection, but just connecting with people is like
important. Well, and that's you're absolutely spot on, because that's, I mean, I did a whole podcast episode where I just talked about, you know, the friends I've made and the things that we've done all because of karate, and those connections would have never happened had it not been for karate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really feel that. And that's, I mean, like, I remember meeting you for, I think, yeah, I mean, it's weird because I've always knew you were there and whatnot, but I never like sat down and actually was able to talk to you until very recently. Like, it was kind of like, I always knew Michael Hagen sensei. So it's like, oh, it's that sensei that he speaks really good Japanese and he's really knowledgeable about tournaments and he's very, you know, skilled in a lot of kata, but I never talked to him. So it was only like 2 years ago in which I really got down and really got to sit down and talk to you. And it's really weird because you were always there. It wasn't like like a ninja that just suddenly appeared and was like, hello. It's like, it kind of made me regret that I wish when I was in America and you came to our dojo, you know, many times, that I wish I built this connection with you a much faster or a much younger age. Cause then maybe I think, earlier, because I think if that was the case, I might have been more interested in that competition aspect that you are so well versed and whatnot. So,
well, and that's, yeah. It's funny that you say that because, you know, when I first moved to California and I began training with Oshiro Sensei, and that was very shortly after I had actually just stopped competing. And so, you know, it's how life, these little twists in life and how everything happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So, yeah. And I still remember you sometimes you gave like tips to people in the dojo who were like interested in competition and whatnot. Yeah. So it's like, oh, then like you were, I remember at the time, was that around the time when the Hasegawa brothers were pretty, I don't know.
It was right at the, it was, they were, they, yeah. they were,
yeah,
they were still, they were finishing. That was right about the middle towards the end of when they were competing in Team Kata.
Yeah. They were like the gold standard of that. Yeah. And then everyone was like, what's the kata that we should, you know, mold it to? And I remember you're very well versed in that. And of course, you know, me being a little snotling back then, I was just like, competition, like, what does that mean? Like, it's just, it's like, it means nothing to me kind of thing. But, and yeah, but going back to that, I mean, I remember earlier this year that I contacted you and I was thinking of maybe going, you know, putting my hat into the ring of just being like, maybe I'll give it a shot with competition. And that was a whole interesting.
I know we had a long, like two and a half hour conversation that time.
Right.
Too. But I want to set the stage because you brought that up and that's a perfect place to start. So you've been training with Oshiro Sensei in Shimaha Shorinju, right?
And yes, exclusively Shimaha Shorinju. Yeah,
exclusively, as well as Sensei's Yamane-ryu. Is that right?
Yes, Yamane-ryu. Yep. Well, so, Yamane-chinen-ryu.
So, when you earlier this year, when this idea came up, well, So that was in California, where you grew up predominantly in California.
Yes. Yeah. I was born in Japan, but I'm American through and through. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And then around the same time that Oshiro Sensei moved back to Okinawa from California, you also moved to Okinawa to continue training with Oshiro Sensei.
Yes. I guess the best way to say it in Japanese, I chased him. That's the best way to say it because he's like,
absolutely.
All right, guys, I'm moving to Okinawa. And it was the first really big decision in my life. Like I was until then, I'll be honest with you. I was very comfortable in California. Like I got everything. I finished my art college. I was, you know, doing, you know, pretty well with that. I speak English. So in California, it's all nice weather and all that. So I was like, okay, there's nothing, no challenge really per se. And then Oshiro Sensei says, okay, I'm moving back to Okinawa. And I was like, oh, well, now this is something kind of thing. So then at that point, I was like, when I told him I'm moving to Okinawa, he was in fact the first person I told him. I didn't even tell my parents. I was like, I'm moving to Okinawa. He's like, okay, well, I guess in a sense, he kind of had this like mentality. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of half-assed kind of thing. Like, you know, excuse my language, but it was kind of like he wasn't like looking down on me, but it was still like, okay, well, you know, if you do, let me know if you're for real kind of thing. And then I was like, no, I'm really doing this. And I told my parents like, hey, so I'm thinking of moving to Okinawa. They're like, all right, but you don't speak Japanese. You don't really have any connections in Okinawa. Your grandparents are in the mainland. So, I mean, what the hell are you going to do there? I'm like, well, Sean's moving to Okinawa. And then that changed their entire perspective. Like, oh, well, if he's moving, well, you better go then kind of thing. Right. So, yeah. So that's, I mean, in the gist of it all, for time's sake, that was pretty much the story of me.
So it's funny that you say that because kind of Shihan's reaction there, I find that in many ways, that's almost a typical, how to say this, a typical Japanese thing. Like, oh, is that really what you're going to do? Well, then show me.
Right.
Right. At first, it's like, here, you're saying this, but you know, show me the action.
Yeah.
Show me the concrete action.
Right. So I think it's that one time you had that, I remember seeing that podcast you had with, I forgot his name. He's a Shotokan practitioner
Yusuke-kun.
On YouTube. Yeah. Yusuke. You were talking with him when it came to the Gashuku, like, you know, there's two new gakusei, foreign students, you and another person. I don't think you mentioned his name, but they came to the Bukutsu. And then, you know, your friend was very like on and off. Like he went there when he had it and when he felt like going. And then for you, it's like rain or shine, you know, whether they like me or not, I'll go there kind of thing. So it's kind of the same mentality. So for him, for Sihan was like, okay, I mean, I'm not against it, but unless, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well then show me the concrete proof that you're coming along, and then, all right, then we'll go with that. So
now you're back in Okinawa, and you're training with Hiro Sensei, and Shimoji-san has a dojo there, and you get the idea to compete in JKF competition.
Right. It's weird. It was very weird because I know, because you're about to ask me what was the, oh geez, I'm this one, the one little thing I might slip up on with this podcast is I might say a lot of Japanese words because my English has actually degraded. But the kitaku, I don't know what that word is.
The impetus or the driving.
Yeah. That one little thing inside me that was like, maybe I should give a shot at the competition was, it wasn't one thing really. It was just like more like one day suddenly it was like I woke up and I was like, well, why not throw your hat into the ring kind of thing? Like, it's like, what have I got to lose doing this? Is what came across me. It's like I go out there, I do it, and it wasn't even about me necessarily winning or about the fear of losing, perhaps. It wasn't even that. It was just like I wanted to just go out there because I guess the best way to describe it is something new.
Yep.
That I haven't, like, I did tournaments in America, but I wasn't very committed. It was just like, I'll do it because it's there. But it wasn't like, I'll do it because I want to do it. It was like, most of the time, it's like a senpai or someone who's very skilled in the dojo went out and did it. So, you know, you kind of like tag along and just be like, okay, I'll come. Yeah, do it. But then for this time, it was like, I know, I kind of want to do it myself. Just go venture out there and put myself out there and see. Maybe it was also a part of me that wanted to see what's out there, like, you know, to get a really good pulse of what's going on outside of my style,
right?
Perhaps because nothing in karate, regardless of traditional sports, is really, how can I say, they're all interwoven. As much as people say they're not interwoven, I think very much so it is. Whatever happens in the sports world has a ripple effect within the traditional realm. World, and then vice versa. Like, you know, if there's a new discovery within the traditional aspect, that definitely affects the sports or the sports karate. So I feel that that's like, you know, a part of me that said, okay, well, why not join it, see what goes out. So that was the little, I think, driving force is that came into it. Yeah, so then I thought, well, why not contact Michael Higgins? Because all this time here was my sensei who knew a lot about this. So I was just like, okay, well then I got to contact him about it. And so it was a really interesting conversation we had about that.
Yeah.
With, you know, on aspects of that. And it was also the hard part was the fact that I had to do goju kata for the first time.
You're doing goju kata.
Yeah, so that was seifai and kururunfa. Right, those were the two kata.
That seems very different than our shorinryu. What was the deciding factor there?
I think it was the fact that I looked at shorinryu kata, and then I looked at shotokan and all this other thing. And this isn't bashing any styles or whatnot, but this, I think it really comes down to when it comes to kata, like to what you're going to perform or whatnot, it really comes down to your body, you know, to what your body's used to and whatnot. And then from the get-go, I pretty much knew that I cannot do shoulder. Because it will, I'm not going to say I cannot do it, but I think it would have taken much longer for me to understand the nuances of shoulder kata stances and how to really, you know, get that kata down. So then also, Eisaku Shimoji, he's an instructor within RBKD. He was, before he came, he joined RBKD, he was a goju-ryu practitioner. Okay. Not only that, he was a very good goju-ryu practitioner. He won the Karate Open I think that was, many years back, but he won that
US Open in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, yes, US Open in Las Vegas. Yes, he won that. And I remember him coming to the dojo when I was like seven. And he was a college student. I remember him practicing Shihan night and day and whatnot. But I had I don't want to consider a person a resource, but I had that resource there as knowledgeable with Goju-Ryu. Like if I had any questions, I could definitely go to him. So I thought, okay, well then that's probably the best base and whatnot. Like it's like Goju-Ryu is alien to me, but there's still a person there that could like guide me through it. So that was the driving factor with me choosing, okay, well, why not go with that Goju-Ryu style? So that was kind of that.
So then that I made. How did it, I guess, feel doing, you said Seipai and Kurudunfa, right? Those are the two kata that you're practicing for the the mandatory kata for JKF competitions.
Yeah, shite kata, right.
So those are, even both of those, I mean, I know both of those kata as well, and I've done them in the past. But those are, again, very, very different than our Shimaha Shorinryu kata. So how did it feel to do those?
I think that the interesting thing is that I'm more of a person that strongly believes in having a strong base. So me practicing exclusively Shimaha Shorinryu for, geez, I think it's now been 22 years of just studying Shimaha Shorinryu, I think it's given me a very good base. So then in that sense that the Embusen and the stances are very different in Goju-Ryu. So you have the Sanchin Dachi, their Nekowashi Dachi is very different from Shimaha Shorinryu, or just Shorinryu in general and whatnot. And of course, the what you're doing with the techniques is completely different as well. There's no techniques that Seppai and Kurunufa have in any of our Shorinryu kata. But I feel because there was such emphasis on how to use the body, it was more like learn the intricacies of the kata, but it wasn't alien to me in the sense that like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, okay, right. I think I could do this here using this part of the body. But it was just the hardest part for me was with JKF kata in general. It's that I had to make sure my chest was pointing forward always and, you know, square up onto the embusen and whatnot. Right. While for me, I've been always told never show the chest.
Right.
And that, well, there's meanings behind that, but we could probably go into that later. But it was just getting used to that was probably the most alien for me. In that sense, I guess the best way to say is I felt naked. Right. So it's like, wait a minute, like, no, this is wrong. Like, I guess, I don't want to say wrong, but I guess the best way is like, wait, this is new to me,
kind of thing. Right.
Wait, this is very alien in that sense. Like the concepts, I think I had to detach a little bit of that Bujutsu concept out of it. Mm-hmm. Like I could not think like, this is not combat or this is not self-defense or Washinjutsu. This is competition. So you kind of have to, like, I kind of had to tell myself, look, you kind of have to throw that, not to the cast it out to win, but that needs to be put aside for this particular challenge that you're trying to take part. Yeah. So that was the interesting part.
And so one thing I found interesting, because I'm glad you mentioned some of that, because one thing I found interesting, I remember one time, maybe 4 years ago now, three, 4 years ago, I stopped to see Shihan one day when you were still in Redwood. I'm sorry, not Redwood, San Mateo. Wow, that's old school Redwood.
Oh yeah,
Redwood dojo.
We had three dojos in America: Redwood, and then the big San Mateo dojo, right. And then like the small San Mateo dojo. Yeah. Right. Redwood City was the wow, that's old school.
Yeah,
yeah, the original. Yeah.
Well, because I remember I helped move from Redwood into the first San Mateo dojo.
Yeah, see, that's the first time I met you too. I was all like, here's this really tall, like, I don't want to be rude, but here's this really tall gaijin, and he speaks perfect Japanese.
No.
Who is this guy? that's I think that was the the thing. And then I remember you were like showing like some Gojo kata to someone, you know what? I'm like, wait, he does our style, Yamaniryu, and he does like Gojo kata? Like, who is this guy? He's like a Superman guy.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That was going through my mind when I was like, geez, I was like 12 when we moved out of that old Redwood.
Maybe. Yeah,
10 or 12, and then we moved to that big Sanso Tojo.
So. Yeah.
But that's an aside.
Never. So, but I remember talking with Shihan one day, and I think I was getting ready for nationals, or I was doing something, and I was going over Supadimpe in the dojo, and he gave me, you know, he started working on some pointers and stuff like that, where it was the biomechanics, the body mechanics of it, mm-hmm. and still mm-hmm. being able to things that are not necessarily style specific, not even Shimaha specific, but like folding the body and things like that, how to mm-hmm. improve the efficiency. And
right.
And I was wondering if when you're going through these Goju kata, did you find anything like that also, to where it's like, oh, I can do the concepts, maybe not the exact movement, but the concepts mm-hmm. behind the way we do things normally and apply them
right
here in a slightly different manner.
Right. I think the thing is that, to be honest on that, is I had that drive to be all like, oh, maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that. But again, I guess in that sense, you have to kind of throw away your ego and whatnot. I knew absolutely nothing about the Goju Kata. I knew the history. Yep. I know the Embusen. I've seen Kurudun Faset by that hundreds of times, but I have no knowledge of doing it. So the thing is that in that sense, I kind of put the ball into Shimoda Sensei's court, and I just said, please teach me. And then since he has such a deep foundation in Goju-Ryu and Shimaha Shoryu, he was able to be like, okay, so here, this is when you could be like this in Shima and using this kind of body concept here. So I think one example, I think the best part was, I think when the opening part in Seifai, where you kind of do that from below the elbow, you go up and then do this thing. He said, a lot of times, again, it depends on many ways it's taught. But sometimes people really kind of like, you know, they kind of freeze it there. And then they kind of go, one, two kind of thing. He said, well, you could kind of make it flow in that sense. But in that sense, you know, he's talking about a lot of part of the body to fold it here. Don't make it big. Tuck in your elbows. Like a lot of these concepts that we put in Shoryu. But he says, we could do that in Goju-Ryu and whatnot. And so we did a lot of those things together and whatnot. And that was mainly not me putting that in there. It was more like, oh, he said, we'll take it from this kata, Shoryu, from Shima Shoryu. We do this in this kata, right? So we can apply this here, but in reverse, or do it like this. So it was a lot of, you know, a lot of pushing and pulling, in a sense of like, I would ask him, like, is it, you know, should we do it the JKF way, like, you know, as they say, or should we just kind of add our concept here and here? And he said, okay, well, we could add here and whatnot. But when it was kind of like in movement, like, so for example, while we're doing the movement, use our concepts, but when we end, we have to look like the Otehon. We have to look like the JKF kind of thing. So it was very difficult in that sense for me, where it was all like, for me, in, again, this is a little bit of my ego kicking into that. So I was like, well, who the hell cares kind of thing? Like, no, I'm doing what I want. And say, no, you have to stick with the Otehon kind of thing. So in that sense, I think that was the hardest part. But adding the concepts was easy for me because I had someone so knowledgeable next to me
right.
who said, okay, well, do this, do that. Okay. So all I had to do was listen. So it was much, much easier versus maybe for you, it was kind of just by my, who was, you know, you had to do it by yourself kind of
right.
and whatnot. And just be like, really kind of sit down and really dissect the concept. Versus for me, it was more like, I had this expert here already next to me. It's like no, don't do the concept here, because that makes the kata look very different from what the judges are used to. So instead of doing that here, do it here. So it was very helpful in that sense. Yeah, but we did add those biomechanic those ideas of shuriki within the Goju-Ryu kata, but it's or just what you said, the efficient biomechanics into the Goju-Ryu kata.
You see, and that's what I find interesting is that, because on one hand, sometimes I do the same thing with some of the athletes that I train now. You guys are working in, and so I appreciate how, even though, you know, it's like we're almost doing the same thing in many ways. I have a girl here that I've been working with off and on for the past year, mm-hmm. when we can, who just won the Chinese version of the Kuktai, their national festival.
Oh, right. I did see that on Instagram, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, in Japan, they have the Kuktai every year, but here it's only every 4 years. So it's kind of like they treat it almost like a mini domestic Olympics. And
it's like a little Olympic. Right
there. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, for example, she does a variety of kata that you see in competition. But I remember specifically, for example, like Supadimpe, like there are, one thing that I try to do sometimes is I try to hide the movement within the movement.
Yeah.
Move your foot this way. Don't rotate. You know how Shihan will pick his foot up and turn his foot. Okay, so when you're transitioning from Shikodachi to Nekwashidachi, for example, don't rotate on that base foot. Just pick your foot up, reset your hips, and then you can get your stance much easier. And so I find it fascinating that we're going through almost the same process independently.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know, trying to get almost the same results.
Right. And it's a little bit unfortunate in the sense that the momentum with the coronavirus, it kind of just killed that. You know, I was very much looking forward to kind of going with the JKF tournaments, but, you know, just the momentum, everything kind of like spiraled out and whatnot. So in a sense, I don't think anytime soon I'll be competing and whatnot, but I still think that, you know, I mean, there's always, you know, opportunities like maybe the US Open or something like that, that I might take part in that.
So the Okinawa Prefecture tournament, everything, the Kyushu tournament, that all got canceled this year still?
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty much, you know, it's dead in the water as of now. And I think it's unfortunate. But at the same time, I kind of feel that despite me not being able to practice, those couple months of really just honing in on a completely alien concept was very helpful to me. And I don't think it's, you know, time wasted per se. I think it was very interesting. Like, see, it's learning a new skill. And I don't think that's how can I say this in karate, when it comes to karate? In the sense that we always strive to learn something new within our style or try something we're not used to and whatnot, but to actually really get out of our style and try to do something completely different, I think is very helpful. But I think it was like, it's good to have someone there who knows that versus, you know, if you just kind of like do it prematurely, but if you kind of do it like haphazardly, you kind of end up as a little bit of a disaster, I feel. So it was just, it was really good that I had someone sensei over there next
absolutely.
To me. So like, okay, yeah, this is maybe how you should do it. This is maybe how you should, you know,
so
do things.
Let's kind of switch gears for a minute, because you just mm-hmm. mentioned something that, you know, going out of your style or learning new things and seeing new things. You know, you said you've, you know, if, as far as your karate goes, you until recently, this foray into learning a couple goju kata, you've trained exclusively, you know, with Oshiro sensei and you know, our Shimaha Shorinyu and Yamane Chinenyu, but you also mm-hmm. have some like boxing experience and
right
and stuff like that,
wrestling
right? Wrestling mm-hmm. and boxing experience, mm-hmm. so
right.
You know, and you made a comment, like I just saw this the other day on Instagram, you posted some bunkai that you're working on, that you were working on with Nicholas.
Nicholas Perez. He's from Colombia, but.
So what do you see? You're there in Okinawa right now, and, you know, we've had numerous mm-hmm. conversations, but kind of, I'm curious as to your take on, I guess, the state of karate. And, you know, because we've mentioned traditional and we mentioned sport And, you know, you're trying to do competition, but then you're also working Bunkai and Kobujutsu and kind of, I know this is kind of a very open-ended and broad question, but when you mentioned like coming in, bringing things from outside your style, like I have a little bit, I mean, I have a variety of other experiences from training I picked up along the way, you know, some Kali, a little Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and things like that. And the more, in some cases, the more I see from other things, the more I can be like, oh yeah, that move is almost the same as what this other move is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of curious on to your perspective on like the state of karate as you see it right now in there in Okinawa.
Right. I think.
As a charter member, I thought that was a good place to hit pause and wrap up episode one or part one of my conversation with Kenji Hirai. And I hope you'll tune in next week where he starts to talk more about his training philosophy and things like that. And as always, thank you for listening to the Apex Karate Performance Podcast.